put him in the Heisman.
Got that award right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer for those anytime easy drinking occasions.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team that's going to bring back a College World Series title. Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
So which player are you most excited to see return this season?
Is Isaiah Joe an answer that we'll accept in this?
You can have that. If
I can have that.
Back.
Isaiah Joe, a full
Don't
healthy.
Don't jinx it, though.
I understand. I mean, but that's the player for a lot of reasons. I think a lot of us would be most excited to say, A, I'm coming back, and B, to see what a full healthy season would look like. He missed those games in the middle of the conference schedule, but also a season where there's no, undoubtedly he's the leader of the team in so many ways. Offensively, he's as good a defender as you've had, particularly on ball defender this past season. I guess a better way of saying it was, what would this team look like if he's the man? Because I think if he comes back, he's the man on the team, right? He's the alpha.
The returning alpha, yeah.
Yes.
I don't know if I'm under the impression that Moses Moody might be the best player on that team next year if he translates. Like, I think he will, but I think Isaiah has the opportunity to be one of the best players returning in the Southeastern Conference. We see he could take that next step because he hasn't been the guy yet. You had Gafford 2 years ago. You had Mace this past season.
Mm-hmm.
Could Isaiah become the centerpiece of this offense? Now, he's been the number two guy to this point, but he hasn't been the main guy. And in college basketball, really basketball anywhere you play, there's a big difference in becoming the main guy rather than just a crucial secondary piece. Can he take that next step? I think he can if he's healthy. I think he can continue to put weight on, as we saw this past season. Well, he put on, 25 pounds this past season? In the offseason, you think about he was able to get a little better off the dribble, but a lot of that was deterred by the injuries that he faced. The injury he faced. And so you didn't necessarily get to see that full blossoming because of how he was hampered by that said injury this past season.
Absolutely. There's some guys that were on the roster last year, like a Connor Vanover, a Note. Some of these guys we have not seen anything out of, other than maybe a little bit of action in that red-white game in Barnhill. I'm kind of excited to see these guys, but your question is most excited to return. Are those really, as you referenced, returning
on
players?
On the roster, though.
I get it, but if
you want to do that.
To me, it's almost a debut rather than a return as far as being a Razorback.
You've heard good things, kind of like you've talked about, kind of like we've heard with Traylon Smith on the football side of things, how it seems like he's going to give them a decent amount of production at that two running back position this upcoming season. You've heard good things about JD Note. Now, I try and simmer down a lot of the conversation when it comes to Vanover because it feels like, kind of like with the exaggeration with Mason Jones' weight, it seems like people are going to overhype Connor Vanover or he's going to have 20-10 next year, and that's not what he's going to provide you. He's going to provide you a couple threes a game, and he's going to provide you some rebounds. I think people are under the assumption that this guy is going to be a double-double machine. He's not going to be that next year. And I like Connor a lot, but people are over-exaggerating the production and the value that he's going to bring this upcoming season. I just, after seeing that Desi Vizio yesterday, I'm really excited, depending on if he comes off the bench, if he elevates into a starting role again, I'm excited to see what he can do this upcoming season.
I want to see what Vanover looks like transitioning the floor. I know that sounds like a simple thing, but one of the things that made Daniel Gafford such a great player at Arkansas, he ran the floor better than any big man we've ever seen, really. I mean, he was great getting from one end of the floor to the other and wasn't a liability in transition. I can't imagine Vanover's going to be anywhere near that, but that's generally one of the drawbacks with a big guy is they don't get up and down the floor as smoothly and quickly. That's part of his game that I would like to see, because if he's going to be a three guy in transition particularly, and depending on what this offense is going to look like, It's going to be important to see how he gets up and down the floor, and can he be in a position that they need him in a quick transition.
Well, as a big man, you think your first instinct is to run to the paint when you get back. What's going to happen is when the Hogs do get in transition and they have guys and guards are running down the floor, the big man, if he does get back before the Hog guard, he's going to run the paint. What does that do? That's going to leave Conover open in transition trail threes. That's one of the big things that's happened with the Golden State Warriors and with other teams. They use that transition trail because everyone's instinct since they started playing basketball in transition, run to the paint, no layups. What that leaves open is the transition three-point line. And if Connor, yes, he's not going to run like a gazelle as Daniel Gafford was, and mm-hmm. you can think about Robert Parrish and so many other big men that were so good at getting up and down the floor, but if you can have him in a trail-like set, that's going to be pretty important for Arkansas's transition offense to have him at least get in the play. He doesn't have to be in the paint in the transition. He just needs to be in the play so he can provide them some spacing in that. Another guy I'm really excited to see is what can Ethan Henderson do? We talked about Desi Sills opening up this segment, how he really provided a spark down the stretch. Ethan Henderson, I know there were some on and off games, but you were impressed by some of his play down the stretch. It's not his points. It's not his just massive size, but it's his rebounding and his defense. And you were just surprised by some of that because this was really a guy in his sophomore season you didn't think you were going to get a lot of production out of. All of a sudden down the stretch, he gave you a few games that raised your eyebrows a little bit.
Yeah, and he grew into that role because Ethan Henderson was getting how many minutes early? November, December, like a handful, if any. And he became a guy, like you say, entered the lineup and someone that clearly earned the coach's trust throughout the course of practice and throughout the course of the season. So what kind of development can he make in this odd offseason where the offseason development is much different this year than any other year?
Got a text out of the 479 asking, will Connor be a solid 10-5 guy? I'm under the impression that it's going to be more like 7-5, 7-4, something like that. I hope I'm wrong. I hope his production is off the charts. I hope I'm undervaluing him. I just think anytime you see a 7-footer and a guy that can shoot, you're automatically assuming that, oh, this guy's going to be a double-double machine. That's not what Connor's going to provide you. Last year, at California, he was a 7-3 guy. So just to put that in perspective, not that he can't improve, that's just what he was based on 1 year.
It's going to be a function of minutes.
Yeah.
How many minutes does he get a game?
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a premium light lager brewed with real lemonade.
He does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number three, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
The MLB draft, you mentioned, has been shortened to 5 rounds.
Right.
It's typically, what, 20? Is that right?
I believe that is correct.
Yeah.
And No. It's 40.
40.
40 rounds.
Shows my baseball knowledge.
40. It's a marathon.
So Dave Van Horn mentioned that, and he talked about like how impactful that's going to be, and you think about the draft getting just impacted, and here is what he had to say about the MLB shortening the draft and how it's going to impact not only Arkansas players, but other players as well.
It's going to send a few more players to college, and it's going to keep a few more players in college for another year. It's going to make college baseball a little bit older, and it's also going to get a few really good players to, you know, to skip going to professional baseball as a later round pick and go to college. And I think it's a good thing, and I think down the road it's a good thing for those kids because so many times guys don't make it to the big leagues, they don't have their degree, and they don't know what to do for a while. And I've watched it more times than not, and you know, realistically, if I'm a parent of a really good player that could go really high, but he's got a good scholarship to a good place, I would take no less than $2 million to buy my son out of college. That's just the way I feel.
Dave Van Horn is a very masterful tactician in showing players, prospective high school players, hey, this is the money you're being offered now. This is what you could get by coming to Arkansas and what you can make after 3 years and moving on to the MLB. I can make you this more amount of money, mm-hmm. and you can play on one of the best baseball teams in the country, play in state-of-the-art facility, have a chance to win a college World Series, and also have a pretty good time at college while you're at it as well. Baseball players at Arkansas are pretty regarded in high esteem. So all that tying in, you think about what he mentioned, Tommy, some of these players, if it's only five rounds compared to 40, they're coming back. We've talked about how the G League is going to impact college basketball by taking away some of the players. Well, now these players for the MLB are going to be back in college, so it's going to up college baseball. I don't know how much, but it's definitely going to help college baseball more than it hurts it.
I was going to bring up a kind of a basketball reference here, too, and that's with Musselman, you know, all the NBA ties and showing you the path to the NBA, and that's his big recruiting card. Dave has done that, right? We just hope Eric Musselman can get like a fraction of what Dave Van Horn has done in regards to bringing a player that chooses not to go to high school or comes back for another year and what happens with their draft stock and the money they make at the professional level. That's really like the best we've ever seen at Arkansas. That to me is still what Dave has to offer more than anybody else we've seen on campus in any sport is you come, you play for us, and if you've got the talent, you put in the work, you're going to make a lot of money in 3 years.
You remember the stat I gave yesterday where Arkansas ranks in the SEC draft picks wise? Remember
I
what
do
it
not
was?
Remember
second.
What? Second. Okay.
Only behind Texas A&M. Second in the MLB in draft picks in the SEC, only behind Texas A&M. And that speaks volumes to...
And whose program's been better? As far as results
Arkansas.
On the field. I mean, no question.
Arkansas. Yeah. So, I mean, that shows
once
you,
again, the Aggies doing less with more.
Yeah, so. It shows you that Arkansas and Dave Van Horn have established quite a program up on the hill at Arkansas. And it's important because they continue to have success at so many other levels. And one of the things, that, and I just talked about it, one of the things that Dave does is he shows players, parents who are looking at coming to Arkansas, hey, this is how I can help you in regards to success in the MLB, not only financially, but actually on the field as well. And he has major examples of that. And one of the things he's very cautious over is not letting players out of high school just take the money just because they see a fat figure in their face. It's hard to turn that down sometimes, but his idea is, don't do that unless you really get a figure. As he mentioned, $2 million. Here's what he said about major league teams comparatively to go in college to a place like Arkansas.
I always just tell kids, you know, if you're going to skip college and you really want to go to college and that's what you've been thinking, you know, don't let them buy you out of college because that's what they're doing. They're buying you out of college with a bunch of money. Now, there's a few kids out there that are really good baseball players that are, you know, they've never planned on going to school and, you know, maybe would struggle in school and maybe they're mature enough to get into the minor leagues. And, you know, some of these advisors and agents that are dealing with our kids, the good ones look at that. And most of the good agents, they want their kids to go to college unless they get a bunch of money because they feel like the long-term investment is going to be a lot better for these guys and they're going to be a lot more prepared to have success as a 21-year-old going into the minor leagues than an 18-year-old.
I mean, you think about the connections you make at Arkansas, whether it's certain boosters, whether it's the different Fortune 500 companies up there, the degree that you get. I know that if you look outside of the state, Arkansas in certain areas is looked down upon, but whatever. But the business school is one of the best in the country. I've said this stat before. The graduate part of the business school had the highest job placement percentage of any public school in the country. Let me reiterate that. The graduate school at Arkansas, the Walden College of Business, had the highest job placement percentage of anyone in the country. That means when someone graduated from there, out of any other public school on the face of the United States soil, you had a better opportunity to get a job out of college at Arkansas. And why is that, Tommy?
Well, it's because there's... dozens
of
Fortune.
One, two, three. How many?
I don't know how many Fortune 500 companies are represented because all the vendors that sell to Walmart have office locations in Northwest Arkansas.
Ding, ding, ding.
Then you have headquarters for not just Walmart, but J.B. Hunt, Tyson, those type of companies. So it's not just headquarters of companies. It's affiliate branches or offices of Fortune 500 companies that are represented throughout Northwest Arkansas. And that's just Northwest Arkansas. Think about Little Rock. Little company called Stevens Incorporated down there for those that want to be in the financial game. There's other industry in Little Rock. So there's a lot of opportunities in our state beyond just those that branch out of the Walmart tentacles, if you will. Many of those companies, including like a J.B. Hunt, feed off of Walmart because they truck their goods. Tyson's kind of its own thing, but who do they sell most of their goods to? Well, a company called Walmart. So it's all interconnected, and there's a lot of opportunities because of the nucleus of that of Walmart. And, you know, a lot of people, as you went to school with a lot of folks that probably were from Texas or another state, and there's a big influx of Texas students that come up here to go to college, they find this to be a pretty charming place to live, and they want to stay, and they've met somebody, want to get married, whatever the situation is. Northwest Arkansas is a pretty good place to live. Cost of living's more than reasonable, and there's, you know, not everything in the world to do, but there's plenty of things to do.
And that's one of the underappreciated values of living in Arkansas in multiple areas is the cost of living. Yeah. I mean, I had a great time in Nashville, loved it, but my rent here was almost cut in half when I moved out, and I'm making more money. Think about that. I'm making more money, and my cost of living is way down. That's important for a lot of families, a lot of young adults who are going through early marriage is you don't want to be spending tons of money just to live in a popular city. You want to have a good job. You obviously want to have a good place to raise your kids. But you also want it to be cost effective. Yeah. And Arkansas provides that in a number of different areas. I know here in Fort Smith, relatively cheap to live. You mentioned Northwest Arkansas. Now, certain areas, it's a little more pricey, but you can find cheap living in Northwest Arkansas, even though it's a popular era. And the same could be said about Little Rock.
And so when Dave's talking to these players and their parents, and maybe they're on campus for a visit, this is where those upperclassmen, the ones you have there, come into this. But I think this is very interesting from the standpoint of, you know, we're down to five rounds for the draft. How does this affect roster management for Arkansas? We led in our quick-hitting headlines a segment ago with a couple of players that have entered the transfer portal, not going to be here. This is all part of the process that Dave doesn't want to have guys on the roster that could play elsewhere that he can't get on the field because they're only going to let you play nine at a time and bat one at a time. So, you know, even if you expand the roster, which the NCAA is going to allow, you can temporarily or over the short term of a few seasons expand your scholarship limitations slightly. You still only got so much playing time. And there's not going to be a way to get all these guys out there. He's going to have a chance depending on who comes back. And I don't think a Kerstad or someone like that's returning. Those guys are going to get taken in the first five rounds. But as he was saying there in that soundbite a minute ago, there's going to be a lot of high school players that could maybe make high six figures, maybe low seven figures that really got to think about it. And do I want to go to college? Or as you were mentioning, Arkansas is going to be a great place to get a job when you're done. But a lot of these guys want to have jobs playing baseball when they're done.
877-377-6963, the number to call or text in here on the Morning Rush. Rod wants to talk about Dave Van Horn and the MLB draft. Rod, go ahead, man.
Yeah, guys, good morning. It seems like that's really cutting the throat of the minor leagues. They really depended on the lower draft picks. But, you know, I mean, it's good for us.
If you're a player in the minor leagues right now, you like it because it probably secures your job for a little while longer, for sure, but before new talent comes in, maybe bumping out those fringe players.
This is true. Oh, and the hype videos. I'm a boomer. I don't mind hype videos.
I didn't say I minded them.
I didn't say
Tommy
I hated.
Doesn't like them.
Okay, once again, Ty, like millennials do, take the words, twist them, and change the story.
Oh, okay. I'm the one that does this on that show. Okay,
I never said one time I hated hype videos. You just let it change your day. Like it's changed the entire trajectory of your day. It's just all not right. That impactful
Tommy,
on my day.
Let's talk about putting words in someone's mouth. Yeah.
We had the longest hype video in history in our day, Tommy. It was called Space Jam, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, that was featured in the Last Dance of the night. Him, the making of that movie. So,
yeah, I love Michael.
Yeah,
like so many others. Rod, appreciate the call. Yeah,
thanks for the call.
The Space Jam portion of The Last Dance was pretty cool because it talked about how he had them build a set because he's doing it with Warner Brothers. Mm-hmm. And you think about the 96 season, they're coming off that Eastern Conference semifinals loss, excuse me, to the Orlando Magic, and they're highly motivated because several words were said about Michael in that series, that he wasn't the same Jordan, blah, blah, blah. So he's motivated.
Horace Grant.
He's doing the movie and stuff, and he ends up getting a lot of great NBA players to come out. I don't know if they filmed in Orlando or Hollywood, but he got a lot of them to come out and play different pickup games. And his schedule was insane. He'd work, he'd get up at like 6 or 7, film all day, then work out, or then play basketball, then work out, and then go back and do the exact same thing. He played for 2 or 3 hours, and what that did was allowed him to kind of get back into shape, play some of the better players in the NBA, really kind of pick up a feel where the game was, because at that point, he had been out a year and a half before coming back and rejoining the Bulls, so he wanted to get back on his feet, kind of pick up tendencies from different NBA players, and that's just another reason this Last Dance thing has been so fantastic.
Yeah, that was a cool part to watch, and I didn't know about building the extra or building the gym on site there for him to work out.
That was like a condition. Like, yeah. He was like, I'm not doing this movie without you guys doing that. Yeah. So it's very important.
But I don't know if that's a hype video, Rod.
Yeah, Space Jam. I wouldn't qualify.
I mean, I wouldn't call it a great movie.
So, hey, easy. Come on now.
It's just another movie.
What is your favorite basketball movie then, Boomer?
Hoosiers.
Okay, I can't really argue that.
I mean, Hoosiers is
great.
Yeah.
I don't really have a qualm with that. Yep. So it's hard to argue with that.
I know Ty's gonna be excited for Space Jam.
If you told me Space Jam is better than Hoosiers, I'm walking out. I'm done.
I can't. The fact that LeBron James is making a Space Jam 2 is just infuriating to me. It's going to ruin the first one, unfortunately.
So. The sequel's never as good as the original, so don't worry about it.
I mean, it's going to be terrible because LeBron James is in it, but I'm not worried about it. I'm mad because it's funny how, like, he was always like, oh, I'm not trying to be like Michael, but he does the...
He's trying to be exactly like Michael.
Yeah, and he just doesn't want to admit it. And it was funny. I don't know if you saw the video the other day, Tommy. Someone patched together the Gary Payton laughing, like he's laughing at what Gary Payton said during the Last Dance documentary, and they patched it with LeBron James saying, I'm the best player to ever play.
Yeah, I saw that yesterday, and the cuts to Michael, that was tremendous, yeah.
It was absolutely fantastic. So we mentioned that there's a couple transfers for Arkansas baseball, including Curtis Washington, who's entered his name in the portal. Baseball's lost a couple guys. We've also, I'm forgetting the Houston pitcher that you picked up. We'll talk to Hutch about that coming up in the program at 7:15. But for Arkansas football and Arkansas basketball, you got some highly coveted guys. You think about the football side of things. Felipe Franks is ranked the 6th best grad transfer quarterback in the country. Jerry Jacobs is ranked as the 3rd best corner transfer in the country. Xavier Kelly is ranked as the 4th best weak side defensive end in the country. Levi Draper is ranked as the 3rd best inside linebacker in the country. I don't think they had A.J. Reed ranked on this list, but he's regarded as one of the best transfer kickers that you had on the open circuit. So for Arkansas football, you think about the impact of those guys, it's going to be pretty prevalent in this upcoming season.
Yeah, I mean, but isn't that kind of the way the sport's going? If you're just asking about how prevalent transfer guys are going to be, the transfer portal is just part of your recruiting anymore. I mean, it just, if you're not tapping into that, other than the elite few programs that can go out and get a plentiful amount of 4- and 5-star talent, other than those handfuls that get the 80%+ of those guys that fit in that 5-star category, upper 4-star category, you got to rely on the transfer portal to some degree. For a program that's trying to rebuild and transition and fill needs, I think it's just going to become part of what you do.
Well, you got to rely on it. You also got to hope that guys currently on the roster and that you're trying to get better and help your program get to the next step don't elect to go that route. We've talked about TQ Jackson staying in the portal. He's probably going to end up at SMU, according to 24/7 Sports. You hope that some of your higher, better players, and I know everyone, the biggest thing last year, there was a lot of takeaways from last season, but one of the biggest was after the LSU game, the words that Ed Orgeron did or did not say to Treylon Burks. People were freaking out that Treylon Burks was going to end up an LSU Tiger based on the slight conversation that Ed Orgeron had with him after the game. And when you're at a state of the program like Arkansas is right now, where you suck, you should be scared about some of your better players trying to elect to go to greener pastures, because that is a real fear. Now, Treylon Burks is an Arkansas guy. It seems like from all accounts that he's happy at Arkansas. Now, I know he didn't like losing like they did last year, but you don't ever want to lose some of your top guys when you're trying to get back to the quote-unquote mountaintop. That's very important. So they have to do their best not only to secure players out of the transfer portal, but keep guys happy here. Keep guys that keep the wheel churning here so guys don't leave Fayetteville to go elsewhere.
Yeah, and you know, we've talked about the stats and the fact that players that enter the transfer portal, there's only a very few spots for you at a Power 5 level. That's one thing Arkansas has. They can be choosy. Now, there's some competition for the best players that enter that, but players, you talk about players leaving your program, choosing to exit a Power 5 school, you got to be really careful because it's kind of a one-way street with this portal as far as the quality of destination. There's very few of these players that get picked up at the Power 5 level. Most that enter end up at a non-Power 5 or even non-FBS level. So it's a slippery slope there from the player's perspective.
The grass is always greener, and I know there are some situations, as we mentioned, that it's just better for a guy to move on and not stay at his current school, whether it's a coaching change, whether it's just not the right fit. But when you have a guy transfer after a year, that's when your eyebrows should be raised a little bit, because I think when you look at college football and college sports as a whole, there's just a different mentality than there was 20, 30, even 10 years ago when it comes to playing for a certain school. And again, I get there's certain times that it just doesn't work. It's not the right fit, and that's fine. But you can't just go through life, particularly as at a young age and trying to get into something and give up so early. It's like life is not easy. Playing college football, playing college basketball is not easy. Mm-hmm. There are very few guys that can walk in onto a campus their freshman year and play significant PT, significant playing time. It just doesn't work like that. That's why you don't see, even in today's, you don't see starting lineups of all freshmen. That just doesn't happen. It's rare. Like, you just don't see it at all. Now, there are some talented guys that can take that next step immediately from high school to college. But it's not necessarily, it's seldom, but there's a reason that you don't see all starting lineups of freshmen year in, year out in today's college sports.
Well, I mean, for a lot of these guys that are disgruntled and looking for someplace else to play, it's the first time they've really met any resistance in their athletic career ever. I mean, because they were always the best player on their junior high team. They were generally always the best player and never worried about playing time on their high school team or their summer team or whatever the sport is, you know, make the applicable analogy. Then they get to college and they're surrounded by guys of equal or better talent, and it's the first bit of adversity. Their coaches were probably not overly hard on them in a lot of cases in high school because they were the best player on the team. Now you get here and you're not the best player on the team, you faced adversity, and how are you going to deal with that? That's true for a lot of kids today who's going into the job marketplace for the first time, and you get that first tough boss that just tears you a new one. You going to quit? You going to go try to find someplace else to work? Or are you going to try to get better from it? And so it's not just a sport. It's just a fact of what everybody deals with today.
I miss Mom and Jan at the sorority house, Tommy, when I was a houseboy. She was much lighter on me, and then you're a lot harder on me.
Just trying to make you better.
Yeah. No, but you're
trying
right.
Trying to make you stronger.
My second job was working at a Five Guys, and I had a boss who was an Olympic shot putter. Is that how you say it? Shot putter? Yeah. Shot putter. And she was about as intense as
she?
It gets. Yeah. Her name was Savon. And she struck fear into me as a 16, 17-year-old boy that I never would have thought I would have had. But she lit a fire in my ass every single time she saw me because there was something I wasn't doing good enough. And you think, what's a cashier and a occasionally a burger flipper? Like, how is that intense? She just had a way about her, and it was never good enough for her. And so that was really the first sign that I was like, okay, this is how it's going to be in the work world. Like, I can't ever settle. I can't ever stop. And flipping burgers and being a quote-unquote Patrick from, not Patrick, but SpongeBob, flipping, what do they call him, a fry cook? Mm-hmm. That's really the first sign. I was like, okay, I actually have to get better at a number of different things. Let's go to the phone lines, 877-377-6963. Haven't heard this guy in a while. Don is in Greenwood. Don, you go ahead, man.
Hey, guys, I'm 50 years old, and I've never missed a day of work. And where I learned that from, sports. I can't catch a ball to save my life, but I did play. And that's what sports teaches you. Sports teaches you that you're needed. You're needed there. You make a commitment with the boss, And that's what sports does. Most of us don't turn out to be stars or superstars. Coaches teach very few superstars. What they do is they make men. Then they go to work, and they show up at work on time, and they volunteer for extra time, and they can take a chewing. They know how to take a chewing. They don't turn, duck, and tail and run, and they don't talk back. They, yes, sir, no, sir, and they go home. That's what sports really does. It makes very few stars. It makes Coach Jones from Greenwood makes a lot of men. I realize he's not there anymore, but that's what sports does. Y'all nailed it. That's exactly where it comes. It teaches worth ethic.
Yep.
That's all I got, guys. You have a great day.
I think being a
appreciate it, Don. Good to hear your voice again, man.
The element of being a part of a team, knowing your peers rely on you. Not just your boss or the company or your team, or that your coworkers, you know, in a later setting, they depend on you to do your part, so they don't have to do it for you.
And I think Don's point about, hey, he wasn't the best. He said he couldn't catch a ball worth a flip and stuff like that. I kind of fall in that category as well. I was never really exemplary in any particular sport, but I did enjoy it, and you learned a lot of valuable life lessons from sports. And there's always this side that people want to degrade sports for whatever reason. They call it like jocks or whatever. But there are so many life lessons, so many valuable things that you can take away, whether you're just playing at the high school level or you make it to the college level or even the professional level.
That's why it was such a big deal the other night in The Last Dance when Scottie Pippen decided, I'm not going back out there. You're not going to let me take the last shot? To hell with all of you. You know,
team sport.
And it crushed the team. And Bill Cartwright had to bring the team back together in that locker room. It's a big deal. Probably cost them that series in the end, even though they won that game with Kukoc shot. You've got to learn to not quit on your team. And that was a bad moment for Scotty, and Don's analogy is great.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a light and flavorful beer for those easy drinking occasions.
The crowd's into it. They just threw him out of the game. They just threw him out of the game. He's gotten his second technical, and he's been thrown out of the ball game.
Matt Norlander of CBS Sports. Matt, you wrote a really good piece on Michael Jordan, which I want to get to coming up in our interview. But I want to start with some Arkansas guys, Arkansas basketball. Now, we've seen different reports. I know I've looked at your mock draft. I looked at a lot of other NBA guys' mock draft as far as what we're going to have this upcoming draft. What were your overall thoughts, Matt, on Isaiah Joe in year two at Arkansas?
Oh, good morning, fellas. It's good to be with you, and thanks for having me. Overall, first of all, it's good to talk Arkansas hoops. We get to do it occasionally on the Ion College Basketball Podcast, but we touch on so many teams that I don't really get to zero in too much on the Hogs. Listen, I've maintained for the past two seasons that Isaiah Joe has been one of the more entertaining players to watch in college basketball. I think that's undeniable. Now, clearly, obviously, he didn't get to play a full season this past season. He was not quite as good on the whole as I think I probably expected him to be. He wasn't bad or anything like that. I just thought he might have been more valuable heading into the season than he actually wound up being. And I know, obviously, injury can hamper that, but, you know, clearly Mason Jones was the team's best player, and at this point, Mason Jones, he's going to be gone for good, while Isaiah Joe is considered more 50-50, and I personally think that he should and he will return to Musa's program. But he was a solid player, obviously the kind of player who my personal projection on Joe is if he returns, he's going to come back to a team that should make the NCAA tournament, and he can be the lead dog on a team and help his draft stock in the process, because I think that we will look up in 5 to 7 years and see Isaiah Joe as a nice role player kind of type in the NBA. But I do think that he would benefit by returning, probably upping his percentages, clearly increasing his usage, increasing his numbers, and in the process becoming a surefire pick in 2021, whereas I don't see that being the case this year.
Matt, we spoke early in the show. We really actually opened the show asking the question, can Isaiah Joe take that next step? Can he be the number one guy? Because 2 years ago, you had Daniel Gafford. Last year, Mason Jones was really the number one guy. Can Isaiah take that next step? I think he can. What's your opinion on if he can be the center vocal point of this Eric Musselman offense?
I think that is definitely the case. if he is to come back, because it's not just the shooting is the most important aspect of it. There's no doubt about it. I think that he would clearly be the number one option, I think, at that point. And yeah, I think that he has that in him. I think he is capable of being the alpha, of being Musselman's most important player, and he has the talent there overall as well. So yes, that will. And if he does come back, I think that might wind up being one of the most important factors for Arkansas on the whole when you talk about the team's chances at competing in the top tier of the SEC. It should be another good, interesting season for the SEC next season, because Kentucky will expect it to be good, but they're having humongous, like greater than usual roster turnover. Florida should be, I would think Florida will be better next season. Tennessee's definitely going to be better next season. Auburn will still obviously be in the mix there, and there are some other teams as well. But I think that Arkansas is a top four team in the SEC if Isaiah Joe returns.
If you were in Isaiah Joe's camp and y'all were sitting down and as a group or a family trying to figure out the priorities, what's kind of the one, two, three things you're looking at? Is it money? Is it fit? Is it draft style? What are you looking at to decide whether or not to stay at Arkansas or continue down the path of the NBA draft?
What's the feedback we're getting from the other side on the NBA side? How realistic is it that I am going to be drafted? They're actually in a tough spot there because I'm of the belief that Isaiah Joe falls in a camp with about 20 other players where it's certainly possible you could be drafted, but if you do, it's on the back end, and I'm talking in the 50s. But it's just as likely you don't get drafted. And given the uncertainty surrounding next season in general, and I'm not talking for college, I'm talking for the NBA as well, you know, how many opportunities are going to be out there for you to even play? If you had, you know, one thing I would consider is, okay, let's say you got to look at things, you know, every possible avenue, everything that could happen here. What if you had a situation where college basketball, even though it gets the benefit, it's the last major American sport that is scheduled to start again? Okay, so it gets to wait the longest. Everything else, doing baseball happening now, the NBA even resuming now and starting again next season, the NFL, the NHL, college football, all those will be starting their seasons before college basketball. So college basketball gets the benefit of waiting that long. But even if it still got delayed or postponed 6 weeks because of logistics with everything with this pandemic, maybe if you started in January and you had a shortened season, could that even somehow benefit you heading into next season? It's something to consider overall. But yes, money is also a factor there, and trying to get a realistic grasp on the likelihood you would be drafted and the potential you could have returning to an Arkansas team. I think, I don't have it in front of me, but I looked a couple of weeks ago. I think Arkansas's class incoming for next season was ranked sixth in the composite 247 Sports.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it's the strongest class in ages for Arkansas. So all those things should play a factor. And for the benefit of the sport, the team, the SEC, I really hope he comes back because he's got a green light, and he's very fun to watch play.
Yeah, I think a lot of people listening agree with that. So you mentioned his draft stock right now somewhere in the upper 40s, in the 50s, in a group of players there. Another year, and he stays healthy, doesn't miss those games in the middle of the year. What's the ceiling? How high, in your opinion, could Isaiah Joe rise with another year of college?
If he was really good, if he shot north of 40% from three, close to better than 50% from two, was the clear lead dog on an Arkansas team that made the NCAA tournament with plenty of room to spare, I think you could have a situation a year from now, if Isaiah Joe stayed healthy, that his ceiling would be somewhere in the 25 to 30 range.
I think that's a fair assessment where he could be. And I know
the late first round.
Yeah, late first round on that. We're speaking with Matt Norlander of CBS Sports. Matt, I know you mentioned the Eye on College Basketball podcast you do with GP Gary Parrish, and I feel like I should call you Norlander since that's what he does every day, but we're not good enough friends to do that yet. But he does radio in Memphis from 4 to 6 on the ESPN station there, and Tommy and I were discussing earlier in the program the possibility of Memphis playing Arkansas in a matchup down the road with Penny and Muss having their connections, Memphis and Arkansas being so close. Do you think that's beneficial enough for Penny Hardaway and Memphis to schedule Arkansas in the future?
I think so, and I listen, Parrish would know more on this because actually Parrish just had Penny on his radio show yesterday, and I just almost never talked to Penny. But given what Penny has said since he's taken the gig, he just doesn't seem like a coach who is scared about that kind of stuff, isn't worried about any previous politics with that. You know, this applies to college football as much as college basketball. When it is such a good thing for the health and interest of the sport when you have natural geographic rivals that aren't in the same conference that are willing to play each other ideally annually, but even short of that, you know, relatively frequently, you know, 2 out of every 4 years, 3 out of every 6, 6 out of every 10. And for Memphis and Arkansas, there's almost no reason not to do it. And particularly, I think we will see this well established about a year or two from now.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think the financial impact of all this, even though they are forecast and are seen, I think they will be realized, you know, 21, 22, 23. And that when it comes to who you can play, geography might wind up having a real impact on that. And why wouldn't you? At this point, you know, Memphis and Arkansas are essentially on even footing. I think playing each other would benefit both programs. The fan bases would be into it. I think both coaches certainly, you know, they seem to see the game and what can help it in a lot of ways. They see eye to eye in that respect, and it would be terrific. Is a Memphis Arkansas game going to bring in like widespread national appeal? No, not necessarily. But it's not going to be a thing where it's only people in the region care. I mean, if you tell me that Arkansas and Memphis, we look up 2 years from now and they're playing a game and, you know, both these teams have made NCAA tournaments, both these teams are bringing in, you know, 5-star recruits, have really strong classes. Like, yes, that becomes a game on a given day. And, you know, just call it like it's going to be played on, you know, the first Saturday of December or whatever, right? That becomes a game almost certainly if both teams are tournament caliber. Like, that's top three game on that day. And so, yes, there would be national interest around it. It wouldn't be one of the biggest games of a season, but certainly it's a good thing. And we need more coaches and their athletic directors and their schools to be willing to do that, because it just it inherently helps the sport. And I think sometimes ego can get in the way, which is unfortunate, but we are seeing the return of it. I mean, Kansas and Missouri in both football and basketball are now willing to do this, which is great to see. You know, you also see, you know, spots in college football where like Texas and Texas A&M, maybe one day they can eventually start doing it again. So yes, I would love to see it. And I can't predict that it would happen, but I think it's more likely than not given the two coaches that are at those programs right now.
Yeah, Matt, better high profile non-conference games at neutral sites or home and home in November and December will help the sport, which right now is pretty irrelevant across most of the sports landscape in a normal world that can't get a lot of attention because of college football, NFL playoffs. Maybe some of these higher profile non-conference games would help boost the sport in the months that nobody's paying attention.
Yeah, I fight back a little bit on that. I wouldn't say college basketball is irrelevant in November and December. It's just way further down on the pecking order. But it does. I will say this. You know, you need more of those games. The sport has been better in the past 5 or 6 years at getting more of those interesting games. It does. You know, it now does start with the Champions Classic to kick off the season, with, you know, Duke, Kentucky, Kansas, and Michigan State, which is a big deal. You know, I still maintain, like, you know, one of the biggest football weeks of the year is Thanksgiving week, and the Maui Invitational is you know, as nearly prominent as a sporting event as we have across the American landscape. So I agree with what you're saying, but I tend to fight back on those who say, like, college basketball doesn't mean anything or isn't relevant in November and December on a national level, because I don't find that to be entirely true. There's not as much urgency, but that's just because the season starts when it starts. But if you look at how much we discuss, you know, hockey or even baseball at the starts of their respective seasons as compared to college basketball, I find that it's practically about the same amount on a national level, whereas hockey and baseball are absolutely massive when it comes to their regional coverage.
And I think, Matt, part of that opinion comes from us being in the South, hosting out of Arkansas, where the SEC is predominantly of football conference. Yeah. It's picked up in both basketball with the different coaches that have been hired. Baseball, it's always been good. But I think your perspective up in the Northeast is a lot different than ours down here in the Southeast.
Oh, yeah. I mean, listen, I live up here in Connecticut, and so I actually think I have a pretty, you know, wide national view just in terms of what I have to cover and what I see. But you are so right about that. College football in this area, it's truly a different universe. I mean, I have friends who are diehard UConn season ticket holders. Don't get me wrong.
God bless them, man. I'm sorry about that.
It's not even remotely the same. Like it's always been so interesting and fun to watch from afar. The absolute insanity that comes along with the passion to follow college football in particular in the South there. Hey, I have a quick question for you guys on that note, though. I don't want to hijack the interview too much, but if you gave Arkansas fans the choice between, let's say, all right, you can go to a Sweet 16 in basketball, or you could have a 10-win football season, which would they choose?
10-win football.
Yeah.
Now, here's the difference. Now, Matt, my favorite sport is basketball. I'd go basketball. I've said multiple times on this show that I'd rather win a national championship at basketball than see Arkansas win in football. But I'm obscure in that category for sure.
But understand, Matt, this is a basketball program that hasn't been to the Final Four, and you may know this, since 96. So,
well, it hasn't got to the Sweet 16 in just as long. So
when I say final, I meant Sweet 16. I said final. Hadn't been to the Sweet 16 since 96. Final Four was 95.
That's why I asked. Yeah. You know, that is interesting, and I wonder if we look up in 5 years, if Muss has made, let's say he's made 2 Sweet 16s in that time, gotten to the tournament 4 out of 5 years, he's still there. I wonder if that might change or not. I don't know. I mean, Arkansas, from a football perspective, it just seems like just like an average, almost of an afterthought of a program on a national level. And I know I'm not trying to I know, but you guys know, it's in just a brutal conference there and to fight to the top of it. So whereas in basketball, clearly the university has such a better chance at being nationally relevant and consistent in basketball. Your answer doesn't surprise me, but I was just interested nonetheless.
I think if you said Final Four in basketball versus 10-win season, it'd be a different outcome.
Yeah, because a 10-win season isn't getting to the college football playoff, and a 10-win season probably a 10-win season, is that even getting you to the SEC title game?
The last 10-win season got you third in the division here.
Exactly. So that's
something
that's,
like that.
That's quite interesting.
No, that's right. Yeah,
2011, you were third in the division with a 10-win season.
And Matt, the only teams that Arkansas lost to in 2011 were in the national championship: Arkansas, Alabama, and LSU. So that's the bummers of playing the SEC West in football. We're speaking with Matt Norlander of CBS Sports here on the Morning Rush. Matt, you wrote a fantastic piece, which I thought you characterized in the title of it, talking about Michael Jordan being loved as both a hero and a villain, which is so hard to do. Like, typically when you think about athletes over the years, they're characterized as villains or they're characterized as just being heroes. But Jordan had a way about him where he was somewhere in between, and even people that weren't fans of the Bulls liked him regardless. Matt, how do you think he was able to go about doing that over the course of his career and as we see this Last Dance documentary play out?
I think there was the biggest reason why was the winning, but then along with that, there's something not replicable about Jordan and the cosmetics of his game. He was the kind of player, and you know, I'm sure you have plenty of listeners under 30 who are just not going to, they can't. I'm 38, and my parents grew up in Chicago. I grew up in Vermont as a Bulls fan. I was the Bulls kid in my school. When you watch Jordan, he had the ability that when you watch games, your eyes stayed on him no matter if he had the ball or if he didn't. There was just an utter magnetism to him that was irresistible. And I think it actually came mostly from the way that he played. In today's age, when you have people who are fans, or, you know, to use modern slang, stans of these players, I think a lot of it can emanate not just from how they play, but who they play for, their appearance and what they do on social media, how they are branded. Yes, Jordan had connections to Gatorade and Nike and McDonald's. That certainly played a part. But it was a completely different era, and it almost felt like that stuff was truly auxiliary. And sure, he helped move product, there's no doubt about it, but it was almost entirely based around this player looked like no other player we had ever seen, played in a major market. Once he got to the ultimate stage, he was going to win. He did have, you know, he was the next in line of, you know, it became a common theme where you kind of hit a ceiling. You'd lose to a certain team in the conference semis, and then you might lose in the conference championship before you got to the finals and broke through. Like he had lost, and we had seen him lose, and then he just continues to dominate and dominate and dominate, to the point where, like, you know, I live up here in Connecticut, so obviously I have a number of friends who are Knicks fans, and even they're just like, man, I hated him, but I loved watching the Bulls and watching those teams. It's just there's no other athlete in American history, no, none. You can point to any athlete who's hated, and they're not as loved as much, or vice versa. It didn't matter. No matter what Jordan did, his approval rating was just sky high, and that's still the case today. Like the most absurd thing, I heard this earlier in the week. It's like Jordan shoes outsell every shoe sold by Under Armour combined. He outsells all of the other current NBA players. His shoes. He hasn't played for 17 years. It's just absolutely crazy. And I thought that the past two episodes of The Last Dance really showed how he balanced that hero and villain, even in a comic way. You know, my column at CBSSports.com starts with the fact that, like, when you watch him responding and reacting to Gary Payton, like, he's coming off like a little bit of a madman. Like, he's cackling and laughing at Payton, who, by the way, did a good job on him in the 96 finals. And instead of our reaction being like, Jordan's a sociopath, he's misremembering this, Gary Payton easily held him to his worst finals performance of his career, instead it's like, oh my gosh, look at what Jordan's doing, clowning Gary Payton. Is this not amazing? Is this not awesome? He just has an effect on the general psyche of the sports fan that is unmatched of any athlete before, and given the way that we watch and consume and talk about sports now in so many different ways, I just don't think anyone else can ever do it again.
Matt Norlander, CBS Sports. You can find his work there. You can listen to his podcast with Gary Parrish on college basketball. Matt, we really appreciate your time this morning, bud.
Thanks, fellas. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
The Morning Rush with Ty Richardson and Tommy Kraft.
Blue!
Yes, sir.
Do you trust that I do not want to see you die here tonight?
Sir, yes, sir.
Blue, you're my boy!
Thank you, sir.
Streaming live at hitthatline.com.
This is such a great intro, and regardless if you're a Chicago Bulls fan or not, you gotta like this.
This makes you want to say, "And now,
you actually
the starting lineup."
You actually kind of sound like it.
For your Chicago Bulls.
Who's that? Do you know who that announcer's name is?
No? I've seen him. I don't know what his name is. There was a guy when I was a grade schooler at the high school I went to a small private school. He did something similar to that just to get the gym in a. And now,
just him going,
just start screaming, and it was great.
It's always loved it. when you hear someone's voice like that, where it's high or low, it's always funny to see what that person looks like in real life. Like
it never matches, does it?
With John George, who is fantastic, as good as it gets when it comes to a PA announcer. Does he look like he sounds?
He looks like a banker, which is what he is.
Yeah,
you know. But in his everyday life,
he doesn't look like he sounds on the PA, right? Yeah. And I've been told that before. It's like, you look different. I was like, well, and these are from people that don't watch our live stream. I was like, is that a compliment or a diss? And the typical response is, I don't know. So they can't determine. Yeah. It's probably a diss, honestly.
I need to get y'all a clip of, I was PA announced for 3 years at BB High School and loved, PA announcing was a whole lot more fun to me than like doing play-by-play, just because You're the life of the party, or at least at BB it was, but no. A lot of people didn't get me confused because once they heard this deep voice, they were just like, "Oh yeah, that has to be him."
You fit the character, not. But some guys don't so much. So I think it just varies by.
That's how I got my start was PA announcing.
PA announcing,
yeah.
So it just varies by location.
Hey, do you need some fence repairs done? Call our buddies over at The Fence Man. From large commercial jobs to small residential repairs, The Fence Man can do anything. Wood privacy fence, vinyl fencing, commercial or residential, chain link, custom wrought iron installation. So even if it's a repair because a recent storm has blown down a section or two of your fencing, or you need to replace that old, worn, tired fence, or you don't have one at all, the Fence Man can do it all. And with 18-month, same-as-cash financing, now is the perfect time. 479-782-3936. Whether you're in Northwest Arkansas, the River Valley, anywhere you're listening, the Fence Man will come to you. That's 479-782-3936 for the Fence Man. He ain't afraid of no work.
Back to the phones before we get into What's Your Beef, 877-377-6963. Carl is in Lavaca. Carl, would you say you look like you sound?
No, not at all. 100% no. A person I think that doesn't look like they sound is Phil Elson. I thought that for forever until I started watching the live streams.
He sounds like he's got more hair, doesn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
Sounds like he's got a full head of hair.
And 100%.
Not an ounce.
Burn! So there's a something I've been thinking about a lot, you know, with the whole quarantining, socially distancing stuff. You know, you're kind of wanting to know, they canceled college baseball. You're really hoping they don't cancel college football. You know, my personal opinion, I don't think we can quarantine forever. No matter what we do, when stuff opens back up, there's going to be a spike in cases. That's just something we're going to have to deal with. I don't think we can quarantine for the indefinite future because we don't know when a vaccine's going to come about. You know, the human race has lived through multiple pandemics because we've pushed through by not changing the way we live. And I think towns like Fayetteville, Arkansas, and other college football towns benefit so much from college football season that we can't take the chance of losing a bunch of revenue from not having a football season or even pushing it back. You know, I think that, you know, Eurotruck should come out and say, you know, like he gives the fans the option to proceed at their own risk. Like if you have elders or you have breathing problems or stuff that can be affected by the virus easily, don't come to the games. If not, you're more than welcome to come or fill them to 1/3 capacity. That's kind of my take for the What's Your Beef Wednesday. So,
Carl, we appreciate the call, man. It was a good tie into what we're going to get into right now, which is a What's Your Beef Wednesday.
What is wrong with you?
Okay, I want to complain.
I'm complaining.
I want to complain about
complaining.
I want to complain.
It really pisses me off today.
To simply listen to people whine and complain.
I'm angry. I'm spitting angry. I'm like a tornado of anger swirling about. My heart rate is dangerously high right now.
I'm complaining because not enough people tickle, hug, or smile.
I'm so mad I could eat ball bearings and crap BBs.
It's time for What's Your Beef Wednesday.
So if you think about the colleges in our listening area, whether it's National Park College in Hot Springs, obviously the Mecca up top, University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, you got here in Fort Smith, UFIS, and then there's other colleges within our listening area as well. Tommy, I know you have a good amount of connections with business owners. I know a few. And talking to majority restaurant owners, I always ask them, how much are you impacted when college kids go home? And they say, tremendously. We lose a ton of workers and we lose a ton of business. Now amplify that even more if they were to lose college football. And that doesn't. This is not applicable to restaurants. It's applicable to every business in a college town, much less outside of college towns.
It's the businesses, then the businesses that supply the businesses. So if you're in the meat or produce delivery business and you get it from the factory to the restaurant somehow, well, now you've got less business. If you're in one of these food processing plants, you've got less business because there's less people in restaurants. It's not just the business that itself is affected. It's the businesses that supply the businesses that are affected. So there is a trickle-down effect as well.
But sports don't
matter.
You're
in a hotel and you supply the soap. You're at Sigma Supply or one of these places that sell the soap and the hand sanitizer and the laundry detergent. Well, they're not renting as many rooms. So they're not washing as many towels.
But Tommy, sports don't matter to some people. Mm-hmm. We can get along without sports.
It's
because
a huge economic booster.
Not apparently to some people. Well, morons.
We miss sports, but yeah, there is a huge... We miss the games and the competition and seeing the players we want
to
watch.
There's a selfish, personal aspect to sports, which we enjoy, but there's also a business
aspect.
There's
a real economic impact
from this. Which people, for whatever reason, try and overlook and say that sports are not important. So that's definitely a beef as we kick off this Wednesday. Jenkins, Tommy, which one of you wants to go first? Which one?
I'm ready whenever you are.
Fire away.
So... We are now in a world where we have to stand behind the tape that's on the floor.
Yep.
Whether it's the Dollar General, the Harps, the Walmart, wherever we're stopping to get the handful of items we need to get through our daily lives, to get home and keep everybody at the house from whining and moaning and complaining, we have to stop in and get things. And a lot of times it's rush. Well, now the lines are even longer because we're supposed to be 6 feet apart, right? So when you get up there... Either if you're, doesn't matter which side of the plexiglass you're on now at the checkout stand, let's keep the line moving, all right? These meaningless, mindless, aimless conversations that are going on far too often when I'm visiting somewhere like the Dollar General last night, and a man and two people in front of me, but he's, you know, 15 feet ahead of us, and we're lining up all the way back to the back wall. Yeah, I got to get these AAA batteries because, you know, I had the remote go out on the TV and just going through the story about why he needs the AAA batteries. And then, unfortunately, the cashier engages. And now, all of a sudden, we're spending 45 seconds talking about which way the batteries go in. Well, I hope that AAAs, is that right, or should they be AA?
Patience is a virtue, Tommy. Come on, man.
Let's keep things moving here. Don't engage with mindless conversation. I see you getting lettuce there. Yeah, we're going to make a salad. You know, wonderful. Let's move this process along. So that's my beef today is when you get up there, get your debit card out, get your cash out. We're already lined up in long lines. Let's not be having meaningless, mindless conversations at the checkout stand that drone on. It's not pleasantries. These are conversations that are droning on for minutes. Let's move it.
Tell me you haven't changed the young lady's life or two at the cash register?
Like no.
Jenkins has?
No.
It's a gift.
I just want to get my AAA batteries and get home. That's all I want.
Dang it, what's your beef,
I'll keep it short and sweet. Yesterday they announced that Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1 and 2 is coming back out. And I know that's, I mean, I'm sure that's a game me and you played when we were children.
Good game back
I guess
day.
My beef is, if they can do that with that old school of a game, why can't they do a remastered version of NCAA Football 14? Because every player that was probably in that game that would have, quote unquote, needed to be in the likeness agreement thing that caused the game to go away anyway, are long gone. Let's just remaster it. Let's make every kid happy that was in the, or that kid that's our age.
When in doubt, blame the O'Bannon brother. Not only for the loss of the national championship, but the loss of our NCAA football game. And I say that tongue of cheek, of course, because I understand his reasoning behind the lawsuit, but.
Still.
Yeah.
If you can do it for that game, let's do it for NCAA football.
So I'll go off that, man. I know a lot of our listeners are a little older and video games are not on your priority. I remember joking with my father growing up how his favorite game back in the day was Pong. On the Atari. Just nice and easy. Really fun, actually.
Old school, like, fake faux wood paneled Atari. So, yeah. Had one.
Back in the
Loved
day.
It.
And listen, everyone has their differences when it comes to video games, which is absolutely fine. I haven't played video games consistently since my sophomore or junior year of college. And really, then I played it sparingly. I wouldn't even say it was consistent. Really, probably since my freshman
year. Did you just grow out of it? You lost interest?
I lost interest, found other things to do.
So there's hope for my son then.
I don't know. Dylan seems pretty locked in. But my
there's a career waiting for him.
Oh, yeah. He's going to make $30 million, I've been told.
Your thing is NCAA football. I wish they would bring the Halo franchise back.
Yeah, that's a good one.
MLG and Bungie need to work that out because the old games are always the best, and I wish they could do that. But I would say my beef is just to mess with my roommate a little bit this morning. His dog Brody, great dog, husky, stud, love him. But he does this thing where he paws at the door to be let in, and then just...
Like the outside door or your bedroom door?
The outside door.
Okay.
And then he just stares at us when we open the door.
He won't come in?
He won't come in. And I'll move away from the door. I'll go to the kitchen. I'll walk 20 yards, not 20 yards, but however long it is to the kitchen, and he still won't come in. Then I'll shut the door. 5 minutes later, he'll start pawing at it again. And then, like, we'll let him in.
Hey, I just want you to know I'm out here.
Yeah.
You know?
We'll wait. And then, like, 15 minutes later, he'll ask to be let back out again. He just goes back and forth.
He loves outside.
But he won't.
He's like a kid. Either in or out. How many times your parents tell you that as a kid?
Yeah.
Either in or out. Air conditioning isn't free. In or out. Close the door.
Were you born in a barn?
Yeah. Were you raised in a barn?
That was the phrase I got from my father quite often. And I'll give my dad credit. He built us a basketball court in the backyard. We had a soccer goal. The pool was three houses down or four horses down, whatever it was. So I didn't really have an excuse for not being outside, but... Yeah, those phrases came up a lot. As for Dylan goes, Tommy, I think you're in for the long haul in this video game stuff. Good luck.
We're trying to ration. The homeschool teacher right now is about giving up. I keep reminding you, you only got two or three more weeks. We can do this.
I feel bad for Mrs.
The homeschool
Laura.
Teacher is...
You better have a heck of a vacation coming up for her. That's all I got to say on that.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer. 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.